Today on The Grave Talks, the spirits of Wisconsin. Haunted bunk beds, a mysterious beast that lives down a desolate Milwaukee area road, or a small town that found itself cursed after a mining boom gone bust. These are just some of the dark stories that come out of a state many only reference to cheese or football. Ghost stories in the state of Wisconsin can be traced back to the mid-1800s and fully accepted by its citizens more readily than many other areas. Is it this cultural acceptance of the undead that seems to make Wisconsin ghost stories so mysterious and spread faster than others? Or is it just a state that's more haunted than others? Today, we discuss the spirits of Wisconsin with Mike Huberty.
Well, I was always into ghost stories. I remember being 6 years old in my school library and reading every book they had about ghost stories. They had one about like ghost investigation. Mm-hmm. And this is before, so I grew up in the late 70s and early 80s. And so this is before any ghost adventures and EMF meters. And, you know, they would have little tricks about baking soda and trip wires and things that things that now you would try to do to catch a ghost or whatever. They would just have these little books with illustrations that would tell you how to do it. And I was just always fascinated with pictures of ghosts and like the brown lady. Like the first time I saw that picture, I was like, how did they do this? And it blew my mind. And, you know, so I was just that weird kid that was always into it. And my sister was into it too. My sister is a few years older than I was, or than I am. And we both were just every time you would have some kind of true ghost story or, there's a haunted Toys R Us in California would be on That's Incredible. And that would be like, oh my God. Or there's a werewolf in Britain and a video investigation would be on a TV show. We would, you know, stop whatever we were doing. And like, I think I was the only person in the house that knew how to use the VCR. Mm-hmm. And so like, I would, you know, like, make sure it was recorded. Like if we were going out to dinner, like I make sure we record it. So it was just something that my sister and I were both completely into as kids. We would listen on WGN was the radio station out of Chicago. And we grew up in the Milwaukee area, but you could pick up Chicago radio in Milwaukee because it's only 80 miles away. Mm-hmm. And we listened to stories on Halloween from WGN, and it would be Richard Crowe, the ghost hunter. Mm-hmm. And he started like a ghost tour of Chicago where you could get on a bus and go see all these different haunted sites in the Chicago area. And it just got really fascinated with the haunted history of the area. And anytime it was on TV, anytime it was on the radio, I would stop whatever I was doing and listening. And so I think one of the authors I used to really read all the time too was this guy named Daniel Cohen, and he would write like true paranormal stories and legends and you know, just books upon books for, I'd say, elementary school readers, middle school readers, on paranormal topics. And I feel like, you know, when people ask like, who's your great influence? I'm like, you ever heard of this writer named Daniel Cohen? He wrote paranormal books for kids. And I read his entire, like whatever he put out, I would read. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what started it out. I couldn't get enough of books about the paranormal, TV shows about the paranormal, radio, whatever I could find. And that is as long as I can remember.
Did you have any initial experience or anything that sparked it? Or was it just kind of there? It was just a topic that you were just intrigued by. And you don't know why, but it was just there.
Absolutely not. Yeah. Like no kind of experience. Sure. Like other people talk about, oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Well, I saw my grandfather after he passed in my bedroom, and yeah, that made me realize that spirits are real. And I'm like, what? You saw your grandfather in your bedroom after he passed? That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh, sorry about your grandpa, but that's awesome. And, you know, so for me, I never had any kind of, I mean, I would eventually have some interesting experiences and some paranormal things happen that I can't explain. Mm-hmm. But I tell you what, in the beginning, nothing. And I was always looking for it.
Yeah.
So you know, other people had some kind of like formative experience where they're like, yep, that's what led me to believe I in the other side. Or, and I never had that kind of moment where I could say like, this happened and I can clearly say that this was a paranormal experience. I had some things that, you know, danced around it or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like maybe I had a dream. I remember when I was 12 years old. I was having a nightmare about something. And then all of a sudden I was in a dream where I was in a snowball fight with my friend, and we were tossing snowballs back and forth across the street with these kids. And he brings out like this red circular sled and uses it to defend himself. And I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And the snowball fight was fun. And then like I yanked out back into like whatever nightmare I was having. And then 6 months later, that scene actually played out in real life.
Yeah.
Like I was at his house and I'd completely forgotten about it. And then, the neighbor kids who we'd never even hung out with at all, mm-hmm. like started throwing snowballs, and I'm like, why does this seem familiar? And then he busts out the sled and I'm like, oh, whoa, I've seen this before. And I saw maybe I had some kind of little bit of, you know, precognition in a dream.
Yeah.
That could be something as like, well, I remembered it, you know, it could have been just a weird tick of the brain.
Sure.
And I like a deja vu experience. So I never had those clincher experiences mm-hmm. that people talk about. And I was always looking for one.
I understand. I think I was very, very similar. I was probably doing about the exact same thing as you about 60 miles north where I grew up.
Right.
Because I was always out there. I think it was more of an atmospheric thing than anything else. My interest goes all the way back to the age of two. I literally have, and this is so insane, but I have a cassette tape of me playing radio station talking about ghosts in nice. this is like 1983 when this tape is originally from. And here's what I'm doing today, essentially playing radio station podcasting, you know, talking about ghosts all these years later.
That was
later.
Your own kind of precognition.
It's crazy.
Right?
It's and I've always played radio station, and then I worked in radio forever all over the state of Wisconsin and all over. And then I do podcasts for the last 7 years. But the ghost thing has always been very just part of me. And I don't have a specific experience. Later in life, I had a couple things, but nowhere near, you know, the stories that I hear from so many people. But it's just always been kind of a part of some of my interests as well. So I totally understand where you're coming from. For you, the state of Wisconsin, it's one of those places. And I wonder if this is something that every state says to a certain extent. But it was something I always heard kind of thrown around there when I lived there from several people, from Chad Lewis and several others, that the state of Wisconsin is supposedly one of the most haunted states per square mile or something of that nature. And it's very interesting because it has a lot of ghost stories. Every town seems to have ghost stories, and it's a community, an area that seems to be very open about it as well. A lot of other places, especially in the South now where I am, people are kind of tight-lipped, unless you're kind of in that community, in terms of just openly talking about, yeah, that house down the road is haunted. Do you feel that way? Do you feel Wisconsin holds a lot more ghosts, or are people just more open about it than other areas of the country?
Well, it does feel like it's a weird place.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think about that in the more remote areas of the country.
Yeah.
Like Oklahoma feels like that in some places. Maine, you know, you talk to people up there. It's just some people who are maybe in almost the vacation land areas.
Sure.
Where people from the bigger cities kind of dart in and out of and everything. But you have the people that are here all the time. I do think we tend to skew a little bit different. I don't know specifically about the number of ghost stories per capita, yeah. if it's any different than anywhere else.
Sure.
But I can say, like, if you just collect the different stories around the state of Wisconsin, you'll find everything.
Yeah.
You know, I was just talking to Chad a couple weeks ago. You just mentioned Chad Lewis. We were just talking about the Wendigo a couple weeks ago. And, you know, he's written the haunted road trip guide to Wisconsin and all the different places you can go to. And, you know, from the southeast corner that had the Beast of Bray Road in the late 1980s to, you know, the mysterious was Black River Falls cursed. And the book was in the eventual documentary, Wisconsin Death Trip, to, you know, all the weirdness in La Crosse and the missing bodies along the not missing bodies, but the strange drownings that happened in the Mississippi River in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It seems like throughout the state, you have a ton of weirdness. Even and then when you get up to the logging territory and up north, and Rhinelander has a, you know, a famous hoax monster called the Wendigo. Not the Wendigo, but a famous hoax monster called the Hodag.
Mm-hmm. And also a country music festival with the same title.
Exactly right. And so, like, you have this, so this idea of these weird cryptids, but also up north has plenty of Bigfoot sightings.
Yeah.
And so, you know, every part of the state, in a state that's not really that big, mm-hmm. With only about 5 million people, you do have, let's see, a plethora of, I mean, we have three different places in Wisconsin that have UFO festivals. So there's three different, in this, you know, we don't have a Roswell here, but we have an Elmwood, and they've got a UFO festival. We've got, you know, tiny towns where they celebrate UFO sightings from the 1960s. And it's little things like that that they're willing to embrace. I think we're willing to embrace some of the weirdness in a way, because it's just a way to show we're a little bit different. Mm-hmm. It's a way, you know, we don't have to compete with bigger cities, or, you know, this kind of goes back to, I'd say, one of the reasons that we do haunted history tours in Wisconsin. And my sister started one in Milwaukee in 2007, and I started one in Madison in 2010. And now we have about, you know, 11 different cities where we're doing haunted history tours and letting people know the amazing stories that are coming in their own town. It's because growing up in Wisconsin, while, you know, you can make jokes about the dairy state and stuff, it's a beautiful place. I mean, you know, wonderful for 6 months out of the year. It's the greatest place in the universe. For 6 months out of the year, it's the worst place in the universe. I'm talking about wintertime.
Yep.
But, you know, you see the ghost stories and history on TV, and you're like, oh my God, like in Europe, they have thousands of years. You know, in England, they have ghosts of Roman soldiers. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, that's from 2,000 years ago. And in the, you know, Wisconsin and Minnesota and Illinois, I mean, when the European settlers kind of made the Treaty of Chicago or whatever that split up this land, and they finally defeated the Native American tribes that were living here, and the Native American tribes just gave up and they gave the land after years of war. That goes back to the 1830s. And so it's only starting then do we start having this kind of history in English written down, where we can start looking at and legends and people feeling connected to the land. And so you just don't have those centuries of history here when it comes to European settlers, and histories written in English that we can easily research. Mm-hmm. There's so much First Nations lore and incredible stories from, you know, water monsters and thunderbirds and spirits of the woods and fairies or little people. I mean, the Native American kind of fairy stories. Mm-hmm. And we have that, but it's hard when you're like, oh man, everywhere else has such this rich history and we only have this piece. But when you look close enough, you find all the weird stories, even in the past 180 years. Like going back, you know, you get haunted stories from the 1850s. There's a lake monster in the middle of Madison that you find from the 1880s through the 1920s, you know, stories taken. And when you're doing the research into it, you finally see that there's just as many exciting, and I'd say, I dare say most cities in the United States are like this. There's just as much interesting paranormal history in your city as anywhere else in the world. There's just as many superstitions, you know, people that have seen ghosts, people that have been visited by dead relatives, crisis apparitions, all that kind of thing. And that's kind of with our haunted history tours. We want to show people that Milwaukee, Madison, Minneapolis, St. Paul, all these places have a ton of interesting folklore and haunted history and ghost stories. The same kind of thing you would get if you went to New Orleans or if you went to Boston or the older cities in the United States. Even though these, you know, upper Midwestern cities might be a little bit newer, there's still plenty of ghosts.
It's very interesting, and I think it comes down to, I agree, I think every city has its stuff. I just think maybe it's more in the culture up there, because it's been so open for so long, and people seem to pass these stories down or are so open to talking about them, more so than some other areas of the country. Obviously, places like New Orleans and things like that, very open culture talking about these things, but you get into the Bible Belt and things like that, and it can be very hush-hush. Although the stories may be there, not as openly discussed. It's interesting you had mentioned the UFO conferences, and we don't really talk about UFOs on the show, but sure. I wanted to just bring this up because of all of the paranormal experiences that I've had in my life, and I've lived outside of Wisconsin now longer in my life than I actually lived in Wisconsin, and I graduated from high school there. But of all the experiences that I've had, they were either in that time of growing up or on a trip back to visit, which has been kind of interesting. I've had many more experiences in that state than any other place. One of the most interesting was it wasn't a firsthand experience where I had saw anything, but it was a sheer amount of callers that I received. I was working in Top 40 Radio in Wausau, Wisconsin, at a station called 95.5 WIFC. And this in 2001 or so. And one day, and if you Google this and my name, it, I think it still comes up somewhere on the internet. In one day, all of a sudden, I was working a midday shift, and we received around, I think I logged it at about 400 phone calls from people saying they saw these unexplained lights in the Wausau Stevens Point area, and some of the other towns, and the names elude me now because it's been 20 years. But it was the weirdest thing. I'd never had calls to that sort of a volume, all talking about the same thing, unless they were trying to request like Eminem when that song came out. But aside from that, all on the same damn thing. And we ended up getting on like the local news and all that. I got a phone call from, I forgot, was it the National UFO Research Society? I forgot what his name is. Whitley Strieber or...
You're talking to MUFON? Did like MUFON call you and be like, hey, what's going on?
It was somebody who Art Bell used to have on all the time. And I forgot what his name was. And all of a sudden he's all calling my station. And I'm like, oh my God, I hear you in the middle of the night all the time. And he wanted to know what was going on with it. But that was one of my, you know, weirder experiences. But it was one of those things where just the cathartic, you know, people were not afraid to share these things up in that area. Anyway, moving on.
Another example of that real quick. Yeah. There was a couple of things I wanted to add on that. Number one, so growing up in like the Milwaukee area in the the late 80s, we had like two paranormal stories that were major local news stories when I was a kid. Number one was the Bray Road Beast. And you know, people were calling the police that they saw a werewolf-like creature running around this rural road outside of Elkhorn, Wisconsin, which for your listeners, Elkhorn is about, 50 miles from Chicago, maybe about a little more than halfway between Milwaukee and Chicago, right near the state line, the Wisconsin-Illinois state line. So about 50 miles north of Chicago. And it's a very rural area. And people were seeing this, like, what they described as a huge dog walking on two legs with red eyes. And there was more than one call to the police about it. And this is right in the late 80s. And this is right after you had a family in Horicon, Wisconsin, a little closer to the middle of the state.
I was going to ask. Go ahead.
Right. And so you have this right after you have a family in Horicon, Wisconsin, that all of a sudden it was almost an Amityville-ish type thing, where these horrible things are happening in the house. Like an apparition appears that screams, "Get out," like in their garage. And we were getting like artistic renditions of this on the local news, like the, you know, and so you're right. Like we had our own werewolf. We had a, like a ghost story that was on the news. And so talking about paranormal things, didn't even seem that weird, because if they talk about this, like this is the third story after the Brewers won, you know, it's, oh, the Brewers are winning. There was a murder on the South Side and there's a ghost in Horicon as well as a werewolf in Elkhorn. Be back in five.
Latest on the Packers next.
Yeah. And so it was a kind of thing that people were willing to talk about. It's funny you're talking about Wausau, because you know, we had a so I play in a band called Sunspot, and we do a lot of our songs are based on paranormal themes. And our podcast, See You on the Other Side, is where we talk about paranormal topics, a lot of times related to music and pop culture. And then we'll write a song about it in every single episode. And so we've been in a band for, you know, 20 years and playing and having fun. One of the reasons that we wanted to start a paranormal podcast is because we would go to all these different venues that had ghost stories. And we're always asking the people who work there if they've had any experiences. One time we're in Wausau at a theater called the Fillmore. And so we're at that theater, and the sound person just is just like, yeah, this place is totally haunted. I've seen a whole bunch of weird stuff, because she was up there working like on a balcony. So the sound was done on a balcony while we were playing on the stage. And she's like, I sure hate being in that balcony alone all night, because I've seen things around me. And she tells us that mysterious things start happening, like something was burning in the rafters. It, you know, fell on our, like almost hit our guitar player. The staff was like, well, about 1:15 every night, the ghost like blinks all the lights and the electricity frizzes for a little bit, and we think it's got something to do with, you know, the things that people have seen here. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I forget about it because I'm going to play a show all night. And then at 1:15 we go up the bar for shots. I'm not thinking about this at all. The lights flash. Like we're ordering a shot, and all of a sudden I see the lights flash, and the bartender's like, "What'd I tell you?" And I looked at my watch; and it was 1:15, and I'm like, "All right then, I guess this place has got some stories."
Yeah.
And you know, like you said, when you were in Wausau, that's the kind of example I mean of, like, it's a smaller town, more remote. It's kind of where up north begins. It's kind of where the North Woods of Wisconsin begins. And people aren't afraid to let their freak flag fly a little bit in those kind of places. And so when you just, you know, normally when you talk to somebody, they'll eventually reveal that they've had some kind of experience or something. They won't just throw it out there like, yeah, the ghost shows up at 1:15. Did you want to chase her with your Bloody Mary?
That's Wisconsin for you. I'd never been into the Fillmore. I know exactly what you're talking about. I lived right down there when I was in that area. I lived on the square in downtown Wausau above a bookstore. And so I was kitty corner to the old big old hotel that's apartments now. That was a Walter Schrader property. And then there's the Grand Hotel that's not the Grand, the Grand Theater, which is on the other part of it. I mean, that was one place that I had my my most, I guess, compelling, creepy, scariest experience ever. And I've talked about it on the show a million times, but I want to share it here. I woke up middle of the night, sat up. So I physically did sit up. And this is what I look back on it going, I don't know if this was sleep paralysis because I did move. I sat up and then I couldn't move. I felt like I was frozen, the paralysis thing. And it felt as if I did not open my eyes, but it felt as if the only thing I can describe it as if a cloud moved through me. It just kind of a constant chill that just slowly probably lasted 3 or 4 seconds, felt like much longer, and then it was done. And then I covered myself in my sheets and hid under the blankets for the rest of the night, eventually falling asleep. But it was the weirdest feeling I'd ever had. And after that, I was like, okay, I got to start doing some research here on this area. And I found out of all of these ghost stories from the square down there in Wausau, of the Grand Hotel, of the old hotel that's across the street. And the most intriguing part, though, was behind the wall of where my apartment was is a stairwell that belongs to a sporting goods store. And the story, the ghost story goes, could be urban legend. I couldn't find a whole lot of facts on it. Again, this is 20 years ago, was that people would claim to see a woman carrying a child up and down this stairwell. The back wall to where I lived would have been or was that stairwell. So it was pretty close in proximity to something that people had reported having experiences at. I remember going and doing some research and talking to some folks that were into paranormal investigations at the time, and I couldn't tell you who it was because it was so long ago. But then they brought up sleep paralysis and all that, and how it kind of, you know, ties in with that, but kind of doesn't at the same time. I don't know. It was one of the weirdest experiences I'd ever had in Wisconsin.
Sleep paralysis. That makes you crap your pants. I tell you, I've had sleep paralysis maybe once or twice. But I had maybe the worst time you could have it, which was while I was reading. You mentioned Whitley Strieber before, and I was 13 when I read Communion. And while I was in the process of reading that book, I had a sleep paralysis experience.
Oh gosh!
I woke up in the middle of the night and I just saw these looked like white faces looking at me, and I couldn't move. And I'm like, oh no. I read the book. I called them. They're here. Whitley, it's all true. And then I woke up 5 seconds later and I'm like, oh, I'm having exactly this kind of sleep paralysis experience that people talk about that they said he had instead of an abduction. It shakes you to your core. Like you said, it was in your creepiest experiences. There are these Canadian filmmakers, the Grey Brothers, and they were hired by the Space Channel in Canada, which is like their sci-fi channel, to do a bunch of documentaries. Like paranormal documentaries. And Adam, one of the brothers, he had like a sleep paralysis, old hag experience where he woke up and he saw an old woman on top of him. And he couldn't shake it for months until they eventually, they made the documentary about sleep paralysis so that he could kind of have some closure because he was so emotionally shaken. By that particular experience. So when you say that's the creepiest experience of your life, I can totally believe it because it seems like it activates something internal. I mean, in our lizard brain, even that makes us, you know, it has an impact on you beyond just the kind of nightmare hallucination that happens with a regular bad dream.
It does. And it's interesting. And I believe that there are plenty of sleep paralysis experiences that have nothing to do with the paranormal. It's simply just our minds and how we function. But I think there are so many where there's signs and things that point to it being something far beyond that. And that's where you got to look. And unless there is some sort of tangible evidence, it's hard to ever say, yes, this is paranormal or no, this is not. But in some cases, there's very compelling evidence to show there's something else that happened here. I want to talk about, since you had brought it up, and it was actually, as we begin talking, I never have pre-made questions. I just kind of start jotting things down as we begin the conversation.
Sure.
And we're talking about Wisconsin, and then I knew where you were from. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to bring up Horicon and see if he knows what I'm talking about. because that, to me, was one of the most compelling cases as a kid. It all began for me watching Robert Stack intro it on Unsolved Mysteries. That's how I had first heard about the HorrorCon case. And of course, it's become a running kind of joke on our show, because on our other program, which is called Real Ghost Stories Online, that's the show where it's not interview-based, it's just callers sharing their stories and writing in, sure. And then we read and discuss. That show we've been doing for almost 8 years now. And at the very beginning, and to this day, we have this bizarre trend of a certain object that shows up in ghost stories far more than almost any other object other than a Ouija board. And that object is a bunk bed. And,
right.
And I don't know why or what or how, but it all originates for me back in the bunk bed story of HorrorCon. And with the way that story went, and I'd love to hear what your knowledge is on it beyond what my memory is from watching Unsolved Mysteries. Family had all those things happen. They correlated it to around the time they purchased a bunk bed. They got rid of the bunk bed eventually and destroyed, and then the haunting stopped, as far as I'm aware. We have stories constantly that involve bunk beds, so much to the point where it became a running joke of we have a bell that I have in the studio, just a little hotel bell, and I ring it every time the word bunk bed pops up. It got to the point where we ended up giving away more than 500 of them to our premium subscribers with our logo on. We called it the bunk bed bell, just because it comes up so frequently. What the hell is that? I've always been trying to figure out what is the correlation? What is this bunk bed thing? I've asked about, like, what did the bunk bed look like? Is there a specific model? Was it metal? Is it wood? Is it this? Is it that? The only thing I've ever had that pointed to be something kind of awkward was somebody reported having a bunk bed that they had stuff going on with. They looked on the underside of it and there was a pentagram on it. And then they got rid of it. And this was a brand new bunk bed that they got from, I don't know, Big Sur Waterbeds, whatever it might have been at the time.
Right.
And that was it. That's the only thing I've ever had that pointed to something. The only thing I can think of was, like, well, was there something going on in a bunk bed factory somewhere that cursed all these bunk beds? It sounds ridiculous. But
I think bunk beds contain a lot of emotional energy that other beds don't.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Mike Huberty. In part two, we'll be talking more about bunk beds. And why is it that bunk beds seem to have so many hauntings attached to them? What happened to the bunk bed that the family in HorrorCon, Wisconsin was tormented by? What is the curse of Black River Falls and what caused it? And what local haunts was Mike most intrigued by growing up? Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.